This is James Coover with K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District with your Extension Crop Report. From the looks of it, Southeast Kansas and the surrounding area had gotten in some wheat before the recent rains that turned out to be great for a nice, even germination. However, it is quite likely that many fields have not been planted yet. Some were put off due to uncertainty about the soil moisture, while many more are delayed due to finishing up the soybeans. Right now, we have just enough surface moisture to get the wheat to germinate, but the subsoil is completely empty. The Kansas Mesonet shows that the recent rains barely got moisture down to the 20 centimeter depth, but there is nothing below that. But that's okay. We are far enough south here that we can plant wheat in November and still get enough fall growth to survive the winter. Planting wheat in November does require some special considerations though. First off, know your insurance rules. The last day for full insurance coverage should be November 15th here in Southeast Kansas, but it's important to know your specific insurance rules. Late planted wheat will need to have increased seeding rate, as the wheat won't have enough time to fully tiller. The wheat does tiller some in the spring, but those tillers aren't as productive. In eastern Kansas, we should be looking at increasing our seeding rate by about 300,000 seeds per acre. That ups the ideal seeding rate from 1.1 to 1.4 million to 1.4 to 1.7 million. This will end up being around 120 pounds per acre, but it is important to plant seeds by number rather than by pounds. Too high of a population can decrease yield from overcompetition and increase chances of lodging. Starter fertilizer and seed treatments can become more important when planting into colder soils. Phosphorus is going to be of extra importance. It helps with early growth and tillering, and phosphorus is less available in colder soil temperatures. This importance is increased in acidic soils. Fortunately, phosphorus fertilizer can be placed directly with the seed. 20 to 30 pounds per acre is plenty, and can be ideal even in fields with higher levels of background phosphorus. Fungicide seed treatments become more important because germination time is increased. The longer it is in the soil, the longer the exposed time to the seedling diseases. On the plus side, there should be less insects in the field to cause seedling damage to the late planted wheat. There could be some variety differences when it comes to the ability of the wheat to tiller in colder soils. However, most farmers have already purchased their seed by now and are just waiting to get into the field. Wheat needs to have 1 to 2 tillers and 4 to 5 leaves going into the coldest part of winter for full survivability. We should have enough soil moisture now to at least get the wheat to germinate. Whether it was planted already, or whether it will soon be planted, just as soon as the ground dries out enough to get the drill over it. Hopefully, the chances of more rain in the forecast will pan out as well. If you have any questions about late planted wheat, please give me a call at 620-724-8233. This has been James Coover with your Extension Crop Report.
Next up, we'll have Wendy Powell, Livestock Production Agent for the Wildcat District.
This is Wendy Powell, your livestock production agent with the Wildcat Extension District. Producers looking to cut operational costs but maintain cattle performance may consider modifying feeding frequency. Labor is an important factor in developing nutritional programs. Management practices that add labor and time demands should be justified by their impacts on animal productivity, health, or operational profitability. Similarly, practices that add expenses must be evaluated for cost effectiveness. When you pencil out the cost of various supplements on a dry matter per unit of energy and protein basis, you may discover the convenience of self-fed supplements come at a price. Is that price of convenience compensated by your reduced time and expenses devoted to feed delivery? The ideal number of feedings per week depends on the type of supplement being offered. Some feeds do not lend themselves to less than daily deliveries. Ionophores or urea-containing products delivered through feed can't be fed only once or twice a week and be expected to work as intended. There are differences between energy and protein supplements for optimum feeding frequency. There's evidence that less than daily frequency of protein supplement feeding to cattle on low-quality forages has little or no effect on performance, despite lowering forage intake. On the other hand, the story is different when considering energy supplements. Many studies have been conducted looking at animal performance when feeding daily, every other day, and every 3 days using higher energy feedstuffs. due to the rumen pH fluctuation negatively affecting forage digestion, it's best to deliver this type of feedstuff on a daily basis to maintain animal performance. Advantages to daily feeding include seeing your livestock, lending to more opportunities to check health or observe other problems. Secondly, daily feeding conditions cattle to human interaction, leading to improved cattle handling. There are, however, advantages to infrequent supplementation beyond the obvious benefit of delivery cost reductions. In mud-prone conditions, feeding less often can reduce surface damage. Feeding large quantities in fewer feeding sessions means that more feed is offered per feeding. Assuming that adequate trough space is available, this may allow more timid cattle to feed in a less competitive situation. And cattle who expect daily feeding may alter their grazing behavior in anticipation of feeding, affecting grazing efficiency. Consider the feedstuff and feeding levels used when deciding on appropriate supplementation frequency. For more information, give me a call at the Labette County Extension Office, 620-784-5337.
Thanks, Wendy. And now, here's Davin Scrantz, Natural Resource and Diversified Ag Agent, with her report.
This is Davin Scrantz, one of the Agriculture and Natural Resource Agents from the K-State Research and Extension Wildcat District of Crawford, Labette, Montgomery, and Wilson Counties, with your K-State Research and Extension report. Temperatures are dropping, leaves are changing color, and fall is here. This signifies a big change in habitat and life cycle for many animals. One animal that I would like to focus on today is deer. I would like to bring an article written by the Kansas Highway Patrol to your attention, as they have done a fantastic job in summarizing the dangers that deer present to motorists during October through the end of the year, and what you can do to help keep you and your family safe while you are driving. The Kansas Highway Patrol states that deer activity on and near Kansas roadways poses a seasonal traffic hazard because deer breeding season runs from October through December. Law enforcement officers routinely investigate a large number of vehicle deer crashes this time of year. The Kansas Highway Patrol advises all motorists to be aware of this potential danger and to use extra caution when driving. The following defensive driving techniques could ensure your safety this fall and winter. Stay alert, pay more attention to the road and roadside, and intentionally look for deer. Be especially alert at dawn and dusk. These are the peak movement times for deer and when visibility is low. Slow down at deer crossing signs, which are posted where deer vehicle collisions have repeatedly occurred, and near woods, parks, golf courses, and streams or creeks, as these areas have good habitat and cover for deer, and deer are more likely to be in these areas. At a reduced speed, you have a better chance of avoiding a deer. Deer usually travel in groups. When one deer crosses the road, there may be others about to cross. Slow down and watch for others as they may dart into the road. Slow down when approaching deer that are standing near roadways, as deer have a tendency to bolt, possibly onto the roadway. Use emergency flashers to warn oncoming drivers as well after you see a deer near a road. Always wear your seatbelt. Statistics show that most people injured or killed in deer-related collisions were not wearing seatbelts. The most serious crashes occur when drivers lose control of their vehicles trying to avoid an animal. Do not take unsafe, evasive actions. It is usually safer to strike the deer than another object, such as a tree or another vehicle. If you do hit a deer, pull over onto the shoulder, turn on your emergency flashers, and watch for traffic before exiting your vehicle. Do not try to remove a deer from the roadway unless you are sure it is dead, as an injured deer could potentially hurt you. If you have a cell phone, you can dial *47 for the nearest Highway Patrol dispatcher if you need assistance. From the K-State Research and Extension Wildcat District, this has been Davin Strantz with your K-State Research and Extension Report.
Thank you, Adavin. And now, here is Jesse Gilmore with his report.
With K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District, this is Jesse Gilmore bringing you this week's Hort Report. With winter rapidly approaching and temperatures dropping, many people get their horticulture fix with indoor plants. Many rules of thumb for outdoor plants also apply to indoor plants. Watering is the most common cause of ill-looking plants, often from overwatering. Potted plants can be either watered from above or below. The entire soil mass should be watered in either case. If from above, water should drain out into the saucer or pan at the bottom. This water should be discarded an hour after watering. If watering from the bottom, the top of the soil turning wet will indicate sufficient watering. Sometimes a crust of salt will form on the top of the soil if watering from underneath. This can be removed or can be leached out by occasional watering from above. Fertilizers should only be applied when the houseplant is actively growing, and houseplants that will be discarded after flowering will not benefit from fertilizer applications. Often, plants that lack new growth are suffering from water or light issues instead of lack of nutrients. Adding a fertilizer to the potted plant about once a month will be sufficient for most houseplants, especially for foliage houseplants that will not flower or produce fruits. Paradoxically, it is always better to under-fertilize houseplants than to over-fertilize them. This is because the roots are restricted and can be easily burned by the formulation if too much is added at once. Slow-release fertilizers such as Osmocote that add nutrients to the soil over several weeks will be the best way to avoid damaging your houseplant while still adding nutrients to the potting mix. Take care when placing houseplants near doors or windows. These spots can be drafty, and cold spells can spell disaster for houseplants that are sensitive to extreme changes in temperature. Most plants require a temperature of at least 50 degrees, and a few tropical houseplants, such as Chinese evergreen and false aralia, need a temperature of at least 65 degrees. It might be necessary to move certain houseplants away from windows or off of sills at night to protect them from potential drafts. Some houseplants that are kept outside during the warmer months may lose their leaves when brought inside for the winter. This is normal. Research from Florida in the 1970s discovered that tropical plants have different leaves depending on the quantity of light in their growing environment. Sun leaves appeared on those plants with long and strong light sources, and these leaves grew thicker but smaller and had less chlorophyll to avoid overstimulation. Shade leaves were bigger, thinner, less numerous, and had more chlorophyll. The defoliation commonly seen on houseplants around this time of year is from the shock of being transferred to a low-light environment too rapidly. Plants can convert sun leaves into shade leaves if brought down into lower light in steps. If moving houseplants indoors, keep them in the high-light areas like southern windows for 4 to 8 weeks. The amount of time they will need to acclimate will depend on the light level of the final resting place of the houseplant. If putting a plant in a darker area, the plant will need to acclimate for longer. For more information on today's topic, contact your local extension office. Once again, this has been Jesse Gilmore bringing you this week's Hort Report.
Thank you, Jesse, and thank you for listening to K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District Ag Team on KGGF 690 Radio.